This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 15 of the Beersmith Show. We've got Dave Wills from Fresh Hops here today to talk about growing hops in your garden. I think it's going to be a great show. I've only got one announcement this week. That is, I published a note on the blog. It's titled First Look at Beersmith 2. So those of you who are interested in Beersmith 2 and seeing some of the features there, I really just posted a taster there. But I'm hoping to release that shortly before the AHA conference coming up in June. So take a look at that post. It's at beersmith.com/blog near the top of the list. And without further ado, let's get into this week's interview with Dave Wills. Today, my guest is Dave Wills from freshhops.com, and he's also a owner of Oregon Trail Brewery at oregontrailbrewery.com. Dave, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Howdy.
Now, Dave, obviously you run freshhops.com, which is a supplier of hop rhizomes, and you've been in the hop business for some time. Can you share a little bit about your background with the audience?
It was a pretty opportune thing for me because I actually grew up in Southern California, moved here to go to Oregon State University in Corvallis in 1979. I'm 53 years old. And just prior to moving to Oregon, I'd gone to Europe and that's a whole other story, chasing my girlfriend over there. But I was exposed at a time when there was no such thing as microbrews to some really good beers, obviously, by going to Europe. And so when I came back to the United States, I was off to go to Oregon State to major in agriculture. And that's where I decided I better start brewing beer because there weren't too many good beers. There was, you know, some imports like, of course, Guinness and Bass and San Miguel. And, you know, they're there, but nothing like what we see in the beautiful world of beer now.
What year was that roughly?
About 1980 is when I started homebrewing. And then I started Fresh Hops in 82 because the hop I was buying, even in where Oregon State University is in Corvallis, Oregon, and that's where the USDA Hop Research Farm is. That's where Cascades, Willamettes, Nuggets, Sterlings, what else, Liberties, just a long list of varieties were developed by Dr. Al Honnold, and I got to work with him while I was a student at OSU. So he sent me off to
Didn't you also work with Glenn Tinseth? We had Glenn on a few episodes back as a guest.
Glenn was in our homebrew club and living there in Corvallis. And so we both kind of had hop businesses going at one point. I started a little before his, and then he did another one. And he since has moved on away and moved back to California. But we're still good buddies, and of course. But it's a cool story about Dr. Al Honnold at the USDA farm. I was brewing hops that were supposed to be kind of brown because that's the ugly looking hops were being pawned off on the home brewers back in the 70s. You got to remember, Jimmy, you know, homebrewing was only legalized by Jim Carter, so it took a little while for the homebrew craft to start getting good ingredients, and I just happened to be, I guess, at the right place, the right, because I thought hops were brown, but then when I went out and saw this USDA hop research farm and all these beautiful green hops, that's when I realized somebody needed to start offering some good green hops to the homebrew trade.
Fantastic. The topic for today is growing hops at home, and so I was wondering before we get into that if you could walk us through how a commercial hop grower actually produces hops. You know, we get that little foil pouch at the end, but how does it actually get to the brew store? What's the process it goes through?
Well, that's it's going to be hard to describe in just a few minutes on the phone, but if you were to go to freshhops.com and click on the videos,
sure.
There's a friend of mine named Jeff Butch. He's 4B Farms in Mount Angel, Oregon. And there's a beautiful little video there that shows you the whole process from the hops popping up out of the ground to the pruning in the beginning and the hops popping up and the stringing. And the whole process uh, is is would take too long to just kind of describe over the phone. So just, I mean, you just go do the video and see the whole process, because it starts in April and of course goes all through the growing season and ends in late August and early September with the harvest. And then I bring in the hops from the farm, basically like sometimes the same day they've been picked and baled, or they're picked one day and then cooled and dried and baled the next day usually. And then that's when I'll come up and transport them into my coolers. And then from there is where we store them. We store the most hop coolers are right around freezing, right around 32 degrees Fahrenheit. But the colder the better. Freezing is also good. But when I started this whole business 28 years ago, there were still a lot of hops just being kept in warehouses, and refrigeration was something that just was being introduced at that point, really. And it kind of depends, you know, as many beers I have, hops do sometimes benefit from oxidation, and especially some of the more English style beers, the hops want them to be slightly oxidized to impart that flavor. And because refrigeration has really only been used in the last 20 years, and not even that in some places.
Right. The refrigeration, of course, helps you extend the life of the hops, right? You can use them a little bit longer.
Yeah. Now, it keeps the oils fresh. It keeps the alphas from oxidizing and going down, and the oils from dissipating.
Yeah,
for sure.
So if somebody's looking to grow hops at home, you know, what kind of climate do you need, and what kind of soil do you need? I mean, can you really grow them anywhere, or is there one particular area that would be better?
No, you can't grow them just anywhere. The hops are, you know, they're native to latitudes of about 30 to 35 degrees latitude in the south, and of course in the northern latitude up to about 50-55 degrees in the north. So that kind of runs, well, I'm on the west coast, but
state-wise,
it kind of runs across. It runs across kind of the Mexican border, a little above that, kind of LA, and then kind of shoots across I'm not sure. I don't have a globe in front of me, but it would probably shoot over somewhere around North Carolina. I'm not really sure what that latitude would be over there. But yeah. If you look at a globe, just look at your globe and spin it around. From 35 to 55 is a good range for hops, and we're sitting here in Oregon right at halfway between the equator and the North Pole, which is 45 degrees latitude, and hops seem to like it right here, because it's not all about latitude, but it's also about winter temperatures. And down at the 35 degree latitude, you're down at a latitude where you don't really see much winter frost at all, very occasionally, whereas We see a fair amount. But then at 55 degrees latitude, when you're up in all across Canada and clear over into Europe and northern Norway and that kind of thing, the hops prefer the more cold weather winters, because they want to be able to go dormant during the winter and just actually just kick back and just be dormant. Whereas when you're down around, let's say, San Diego or across Texas and Florida, it's just too warm in the winter for really. I'm not going to say you can't make hops grow, because they'll certainly grow, because they like warm weather, but they may not live for many, many years like they do here, and they may not flower near as much, because the day length is shorter and the winter dormancy is not really as optimum as they really like. But because we're trying to shoot for, you know, maximum yield of flowers here, and hops, getting hops to grow is one thing, and getting them to flower is what everybody wants, unless you just want to use them for shade, which, you know, many people.
Now, what about moisture and temperature? What do they like for moisture and temperature?
Well, we've talked about the winter dormancy, so that's important to them. But then once spring comes, they want it they don't mind it hot, and they, as an example, the main hop growing region of the United States is in the Yakima Valley, which is in central Washington, which is to, a lot of people don't understand, but there's the Cascade Mountain Range runs north and south through Washington and Oregon and mm-hmm. down into California. And the east side is much drier and warmer in the summer, more of a desert environment, whereas we're on the west side of the Cascades and where we are in Oregon, much more rainfall, probably something like on an average of about 40 inches of rain in the Willamette Valley versus over in Yakima Valley, only about 10 inches of rain. So they like it hot, and it's hot and deserty over there, but they have enough irrigation water coming out of the Cascades now that they can dump plenty of water there, and the hops love those the warm weather as long as they've got water. And but as you go across the globe, of course, there's all kinds of little microclimates. We here in Oregon have to contend quite a bit with the mildew diseases that are going to happen when there's more rain, especially in the springtime when the hops are growing and they're getting rained on and the mildew's blowing all over the place. And that's a problem. That's partly why Yakima Valley has more acres, because they don't really have to contend with so much rainfall. But there's, you know, there's little microclimates that are, as long as you can deal with these things, you can get a great hop, and even with maybe a nicer aroma. It's as far as home growers go, though, just be careful and keep an eye out, because I know across the Midwest and back east in the summertime, it's get a lot of summer rains, and that's just what, like, mildew diseases like, and certain bugs that start kicking in. So it's not exactly always going to be a carefree plant to grow, because it does get big, and there's a number of pests that and diseases that you may or may not have to contend with. As a home brewer, there, hopefully you're in an isolated area, and there's hopefully no hop downy mildew or hop aphids or spider mites, but that even exist in that area. So it's you know, give it a shot and see how it goes. It's like growing anything. It can go great, but there can also be a few bugs in the way.
Now, hops aren't grown from seeds. They're a vine like thing grown from something called a rhizome. Can you tell us a little bit about what a rhizome is and how that grows?
A rhizome is what's defined as a creeping underground stem. So imagine a stem above ground, just below ground. It's got the little buds on it, much like kind of like the eyes of a potato, but it's spreading like an octopus. From you plant your original rhizome, and it sends roots down straight, you know, more or less down, and then the rhizomes then spread like an octopus, just usually within the top, say, eight inches of the topsoil, and then they spread out like an octopus, and then they pop up and just Bermuda grass and bamboo and irises. There's a number of plants that spread via rhizomes. So with hops, there's a male and a female plant. Mm-hmm. But the brewer is only interested in the female. The male is not really, it has tiny amount of lupulin in it and can be, I guess, be used for brewing, but nobody messes with the growing males. Only reason males are being grown is as a pollen source to pollinate the female and thus create a seed. And then you would create a cross, just like your mom and dad, a 50-50 cross. It would then create a new variety. But since we're only interested in the females, mm-hmm. and if somebody wants to buy a Cascade hop, I can't really sell them a Cascade seed, because the Cascade is the female. And if she was crossed to some wind pollen, you know, male pollen on the wind, the cross would be half Cascade and half mystery male, just blown in on the wind. Right. And so the way we sustain the varietal
consistency
it would be just by cutting these rhizomes, which are it's a beautiful way to do it, because they just they spread, and we dig them up and cut them into little sections, and it's a clone basically of that female plant.
Right.
And should just remain the same for forever.
So let's say I purchased some rhizomes from Fresh Hops or another store, my favorite variety. How would I best plant them in the backyard? And, you know, should I be looking to plant them in the sun? Should I be looking to plant them in the shade? How would I go about planting them?
My favorite way is to just go on the south side of your house and drive a nail up there in the highest, all along the south side of your house. Just put about one every 4 feet. And then down at the base of the house, plant, dig a hole about, dig a hole about 2 feet deep. Go get some good compost, a manure. I just went to the fertilizer sale yesterday and got a whole bunch of fish fertilizer and chicken manure and rock phosphate. And you mix all that into the, once you dig your hole, let's say it's about 2 feet deep and about a foot and a half wide, and mix all of those goods in there, because it's like hops are going to be there for, you know, hopefully hundreds of years. So you want to enrich that soil root zone, that once that roots start migrating into that soil, it's going to be nice and fertile and rich. So you dump that amended soil back in the hole, and then just stick your rhizome right there in the top. It's important that you, most hops are planted vertically, that way the roots will come out a little further down into the soil. Mm-hmm. But it is important they are planted with the buds up, because if you there is an up and a down, because there just is. If you plant it upside down, don't be surprised if it doesn't come up, because the hop isn't going to be able to figure out how to turn around and come 180 degrees back up out of the soil. Mm-hmm. So if you're not sure which end is up, it's always safer just to plant them horizontally. But the normal practice is to plant them vertical, as long as the other person knows which end is up.
Is there an easy way to tell which one's
up? And then it's not always super easy. depends on how dormant the rhizomes are. But oftentimes there's little white shoots that can, depends on how early the rhizome was dug and how long it's been stored at one temperature and how long it sat in the mailbox and all kinds of things. But they will send out little white shoots off the sides of the rhizomes, and they are going more or less in kind of a diagonal parallel orientation to the actual rhizome per se, and that is not a root, that is the shoot that's going to ultimately turn into a green vine as it comes out of the ground. So the white tips up, and then roots generally will come out of the cut end of the rhizome, but it depends on the rhizome you get. You might have a cut end on both ends, so you just have to look at the orientation of the bud, or if you're not sure, horizontal is your best option, because that also works.
Now, what's involved in caring for these things once we get them in the ground? Is there a lot of, you know, do you need to water them a lot? Do you need to do a lot of care and feeding?
Well, your first baby year is, of course, the baby year. You're starting with just a little tiny rhizome.
It's a two-year growing cycle, right?
Well, your first year is your baby year. You got to get some roots on it. And because there are no roots when you get a little, this looks like a little stick. And so you're going to have to baby that the first year like you would any small plant. So it would be more frequent shallow waterings. But then after year, you know, as the plant gets older and older, you just go to less frequent, deeper waterings, because your root system is getting deeper and deeper and deeper. I have growers that will only irrigate probably once about every 3 weeks here in Oregon, but they'll give it a good long drip to get that water deep into the root zone. So frequent shallow waterings in the beginning, and then less frequent deeper waterings as the plant gets older and older, because the root system is easily going to go down into 3-4 feet into the soil. So when it gets old, you're not watering every day by any means, because it's just not, you're not going to get the water down into the root zone. But in the beginning, you don't also want to drown it. A lot of people think they got to keep them soaked. You don't. Roots need air and water to generate. And so you just water when it needs water, and depends on your soil type. There's so many soil types. It's hard to say how often you need to water it. It's all based on how well your soil holds the holds that moisture. So doesn't want to be soggy, that's for sure. But you just have to, you know, gardening is an art, just like everything. It takes practice. So give it a shot and get, you know, if you know a good gardener, buy him a pour him a homebrew and have him help.
So that first year, you're not going to get a huge number of hops out of the typically, right? I mean, it typically takes 2 years to get a good vine going, right? Yes.
Typically, so, it is their first year is mainly setting, establishing a root system. Up in Yakima Valley, they actually do get a reasonable
yield
harvest the first year, but I think that's kind of unique for most parts of the world. Generally, you're going to maybe just see a few flowers the first year and get your roots established, and then you'll have maybe a 8 or 9 foot plant. But the next year, that's when the roots are established. It's going to just double in size and start putting on the flowers. And then the third year, that's probably considered like a 80% crop. And then third year, you're looking at your third year, fourth, fifth, sixth year, and on. You're looking at your full crop.
Now, are there any pests or diseases? I know you mentioned mold and mildew, but what kinds of things do you have to worry about as these things are growing?
Definitely molds, downy mildew, powdery mildew. There's pictures of that online. Mm-hmm. Then there's with insects. We mainly contend with the aphids and aphids mainly here in Oregon, up in Washington, where it's drier and warmer. They're looking at spider mites. Back east, I hear tale of this Japanese beetle that raises heck with everybody. But we don't, fortunately, have to deal with that nasty Japanese beetle here. So there's a few different things you got to watch out for sure. And so there's lots of different ways to control them. We're probably not going to go into that kind of thing here, but there's lots of different options, and organic and non-organic for disease and pest control. Or last year we had a mess here in Oregon with it was so rainy in the April and May that mildew was running rampant. But a lot of my hops, I wasn't on my spray program enough on some of mine, and they're just didn't do well at all. But other people that if you so you may lose a crop just due to disease from year to year if you don't stay on top of things. But if you're just a home gardener, it's
not that hard.
Life or death. You'll just not that you may have to go buy hops. That's the way it goes.
Now the hop vines actually can get pretty big, right? They can get up to I think 20 feet or more. What do you recommend for supporting those as they're growing? How do you work through that? You need some kind of trellis, right? Or some kind of support for the hops.
Well, like I was saying, my favorite way is really on the south side of your house if you're a home gardener, because it is in reality nature's air conditioner. When most of the country is getting up into the 90s or whatever in August, that's when you want to keep the sun from beating on your house. So the hop gets bigger and bigger as it gets hotter and hotter, and it actually shades your house. Then you can harvest that vine in August, late August and early September, and let the sun shine in the fall. But if you're not in a position to do that, then just pretty much any way you can get them up off the ground is it will work. You can grow them on like a teepee structure, or run a wire from your house over to a fence or a tree, and just run strings down from that. They're generally grown on a kind of a string that's similar to the strength of like a baling twine, kind of a coarse twine. And then the commercial trellises here in Oregon is on average, and with the taut wire running across the top from pole to pole to pole. And then the string comes down from there to the base of the plant, where it gets trained on there to climb up. But you can grow them on gazebos. You can grow them up. You don't want to have anything super fat, like a telephone pole, because that's a little too wide of a diameter to for the hop to wrap around. So that's why I say they generally grow them on strings. But if you've got something like a 4x4 or like on your gazebo, then you know they will wrap around that. You might want to add a little string there just to give it a little help. But full sun, is best. They will deal with morning sun or afternoon sun. Don't try and grow them on the north side of your house or north side of a tree or whatever. That's not going to work out. So the more sun they have, the bigger they'll get. But I've seen some mighty big ones that are only getting half day of sun per day, but they're in some pretty good soil also. So it's all depends on all the factors.
Now, how do you, let's say they grow, you know, first year it grows pretty well, and you actually do get a few hop cones, or even the second year you get more, obviously. How do you go about deciding when to harvest those?
Practice makes perfect.
Are there some tips you might have for somebody just starting out?
The hop will go from a kind of a hard, it'll start off being just like a little white thing called a burr, and then that is actually looking for the pollen from the male. But then if there's no pollen from the, it starts to just kind of dry up, these little white tips, and then the green petals will start coming out, and then it'll go into kind of a hard green state, and when you squeeze it, it'll be green and soft and mushy, and when you crush it and smell it between your finger and thumb, it'll just smell kind of green and juicy. And then as they ripen, that cone will start getting drier and drier and drier, to the point where if you never pick it, it'll just be all dried up and brown and blow away. So you're trying to pick the point where the alpha is going to be at its peak, and the oils are going to be at their peak, and the lupulin is the... So you're looking at this lupulin resin, which is this yellow powder oftentimes people can think is pollen, but that's actually called lupulin. So you break open the cone, and you look at the lupulin, and you feel the texture, and feel if it's feeling dry, and you want to be about 20... If you want to do a dry weight thing, you want to be about 24% dry matter. And so that's how some growers actually do it. They'll dry it and see what the dry matter is. But so 24% is the number that I think is.
So in order to do something like that, though, you weigh it wet, and then you dry it out, dehydrate it somehow. Is that how you do it?
Yep, you can weigh it wet and then dehydrate it in the oven. And to be honest, I there must be a correction factor in there, because you're probably at 20% moisture. I don't want to be quoted on how to do the dry matter test per se. The rub test, where I just rub it and smell it and feel it and crush it and look at the lupulin, because I've been doing it long enough now that I don't really use the dry matter test. Mm-hmm. And they go from a real green state, and they start developing, when you crush them, a nice hoppy smell. And if you start seeing a little bit of browning on the tips of the bracts, that's always a good indication that they're good and ripe. And but practice makes perfect. Just rub them and smell them, and it's best as a beginning grower to just, you know, pick a few early, and then pick a few when you think, just pick a few about every few days, and educate yourself about how the hop matures, and then leave some on the vine just to watch it as it matures and gets darker and darker and browner, eventually just, you know, turns brown, and then eventually the whole thing dies, and the whole vine does actually die back to the ground. And then root system is a perennial root system, but the vine is an annual plant. So when you're done, it'll die back right to the ground. You can cut the stem off right at the soil surface, mm-hmm. and get rid of the plant and turn it into a wreath, or start the wood stove, or
right. You just leave the rest of it, the rhizomes in place, and they'll sprout up again next
rhizome
year.
Rhizome and the root system, and it's called the crown. The mother crown is has the rhizomes and the root system that you just can leave that be for the winter. And it's not a bad idea to take some leaves from the trees in the fall, and just kind of cover over the hill there to kind of insulate it a little bit, and let the worms come and get some of those good nutrients from the tree leaves, and you're ready for the winter.
So that's how you winterize them. But so after you've picked the hops, though, what do you do with those? I mean, you get your hops, you picked them off the vine. Now, how do you actually get them ready for brewing?
Okay, you've picked your hops. Then you can, simplest thing to do is just make some beer, some right fresh then? Hop beer. Don't even have to. Yeah, right then and there. Just pick them and throw them right into the kettle. That's getting real popular out west here, fresh hop style of beers. And just keep in mind that rather than being 10% moisture, which is what most hops are when they're totally not too dry, but perfectly dried, 10% moisture. You're picking them straight off vine, they're about 70, let's say they're 70 or 75% moisture. The ratio there is about 4.5 times as much
hops.
Weight of hops you need to use to, so if you've got a recipe, let's say you've got an IPA recipe that calls for 3 ounces of hops or 4 mm-hmm. ounces of hops in 5 gallons, take each one of those additions from your dry hop recipe, multiply that times 4.5 or 5, just because why not, and make it a little hoppier, and you'll make that water weight compensation by doing that multiplication.
So but, that would get you to the fresh hop method, and then obviously the other way to do it is dry them out, right?
The other way is to dry them out, and I am an advocate of the cooler the temperature for drying, the less volatilization of the essential oils, the better those hops are going to be. And that's the beautiful thing of homegrown hops is you don't have to dry them at, well, most commercial growers are drying right around 150 degrees because they've got hops coming in, and they got to bring them in and move them out, whereas a home gardener can just leave them sitting on a screen for however long it takes to dry. So for a home gardener, I don't advocate putting them in your oven, or if you want to use a food dehydrator, that's fine. Just keep it on like a temperature of around 100 and just let her go until they're dry. But for the easiest way is to just lay them in a layer of, let's say about 4 or 5 inches deep on, just take some screens off the side of your house and put them in a, like in your attic or in your garage. You don't really want to do it in a direct sunlight because they'll turn yellow rather than green. And oftentimes in the direct sun, they're out in the wind, and they do get pretty light as they dry. So they'll just possibly just blow away. So keep them in a secluded area where out of the direct sun. Mm-hmm. And usually after about 3 days, the strig, which is the little stem down the middle of the cone, mm-hmm. Will be that takes the longest to dry. The little bracts of the cone, they actually dry pretty quickly, but that strig down the middle needs to get to the point where it's more or less breaking rather than flexing like a rubber band. And then at that point, you're ready to package them. And there's different options there. You can just we vacuum pack them in. They come to me in big like burlap bales from the farm.
Right.
Then we vacuum pack them in these large foil sacks.
Yeah.
And then we pack them into oxygen barrier plastic nylon polyethylene bags. And so you can do that, which is like, you know, the seal to meal method, or you can take some just glass, you know, mayonnaise jars or whatever, and just pack them in there and freeze them in glass jars. Just pack them in nice and tight to eliminate the as much air as possible and take up as little space as possible in your freezer. And then once they're packed into whatever bag or jar or can or whatever you want to use, then just find a spot in the freezer. And that's the best place to keep them.
Right. Because ideally, you want them in an oxygen barrier. Ideally, you want them in an oxygen barrier bag or an oxygen barrier, like you said, a glass jar or something like that. And then, of course, you want them in the freezer so they'll last as long as possible if you're going to store them for a while. So
that's my recommendation. But there's still plenty of good beers made with hops that have. There's a lot of debate about the whole how hops should be stored and when, and varieties specifically. A lot of the noble hops, actually, when you look back to the day of, let's say, not that long ago, but when, like we were talking about, there was no refrigeration. And there were certainly classic, wonderful beers being made all around the world, and those hops were not kept in some freezer. They were actually just kept in somebody's barn, and there was oxidation. And some of these oxidation products that happen in hops sometimes are what we're actually looking for. And that's what some research has shown, is that especially with the noble hops, the Saws, the Hallertauers, mm-hmm. Tettnanger, and the hybrid thereof, some of those oxidated fractions of the hop oil, humulines in specific, actually do impart the hoppy flavor and aroma that we're looking for. But then on the other side of the card, if you've got these high alpha hops that you're going to use for bittering, you don't really want any oxidation. So those you definitely want to freeze and keep sealed up. And then all of the U.S. hops that are like Cascade and Amarillo and Simcoe, those have more of a so-called fruity or floral characteristic. Those compounds from the oil don't really benefit from oxidation at all. So yes, you do want to keep those frozen. So it's not just like all hops should be kept in suspended animation in a frozen environment. Mm-hmm. But in general, that's probably a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. Now, one question I did miss is when do you recommend planting? If somebody's just getting started with this and start with new rhizomes, when do you recommend they actually put them in the ground? Do you wait for the last frost to pass? Do you have to, is there a particular time that's ideal?
You don't have to wait. You don't have to wait for the last frost to pass, but it doesn't really hurt because it's usually, if you error too much by planting them too early, and then they are barely popping out of the ground, and then they freeze off, and then you can kill them by freezing off the baby, especially if you're going to get a blizzard or something up in New York or Minnesota or Canada. Yeah. We don't really see that so much here in Oregon, and planting is going on. So my general rule of thumb is, on your baby year, why rush it? You're not really trying to get a crop that year. If you want to rush it, go ahead and start them in pots, indoors, or in a greenhouse, and then move them out approximately right around your normal frost-free date in the spring. And that all varies across the different zones. And just if you don't know, talk to your local nursery person about all this information is online now, when the mm-hmm. normal last frost-free date is, and plant it right around then. That way, it's not going to be subject to potentially freezing off in its first little baby year. Then you're off and running, because after that, if you get some frost damage in the future, those shoots might freeze off, but the mother will be the crown will be established, and it'll send up new shoots that will replace the ones that are frost damaged. And actually, here in all across the north hop growing region, the growers generally don't even want the hops to start growing until right around end of April, early May, because mm-hmm. that way the hops usually take about 110 to 130 days from the time they come out of the ground until they are ripe and ready to pick. And so there's people in, let's say, Los Angeles, where they're growing because the hops are, 70 degrees there in all winter long, and they'll come up in January and February, and then they'll actually get two sets of flowers, because that's 110 days from the time they come out of the ground. So the hops get a little confused by mm-hmm. what date they're actually trained as they come out of the ground. And so if you want, of course, commercial growers want all their harvest to be focused into one big crop, and so that's why they train them up right around early May, and then right around 1st of September, they're done. And but as a home brewer, if you want to, if you live in a warm climate, you may see two sets of flowers, and that may not be a bad thing. It's just, it is just for home brewing, just for fun. So You don't have to worry about your exact training date. Commercially, they train them up right around the end of April and early May.
And you already talked about winterizing them from year to year, and I think that's fairly straightforward. But another concern I've had, or at least I've heard from some folks that grow, is these do tend to spread over time, right? I mean, the rhizomes actually spread underground.
Yeah, and if you sure. That's what a rhizome does.
Right. So, I mean, if you got two or three varieties, is there anything you got to watch out for if you're... Yeah, you got two or three varieties next to each other, and they start intermixing.
Yeah, you do want to keep if the rhizomes will start heading towards each other, especially if they're too close together. That's why I recommend like about 5 feet between differing varieties. Mm-hmm. If you're just growing like a row of two or three cascades in a row, then probably 3.5 feet about apart is probably a good spacing. So. Between different varieties, go about 5 feet apart, and then you can always use your shovel to keep those. You'll see the shoots popping out of the ground, and mm-hmm. so you know where you planted your original plant. And if you've got one popping up a foot and a half away, then you know you've got a rhizome going from the crown over to.
So you may want to dig under and shovel and clip that off then at the beginning of the new season, just to keep them from spreading. Yep,
dig
too
it up,
much.
Chop it off, give her to your mom for Mother's Day
before they take over your whole backyard, right?
Yep, because they will spread. Yeah, that's just what happens.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Is there anything we missed here on growing hops at home?
Spring fertilization. We didn't really talk about that.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
They do get rather big, so you do want to add some fairly high nitrogen, phosphorus fertilizer in the spring. I'll be doing that here. I just got my fertilizer just here yesterday. I'll be sprinkling it on now before the hops come up so that the rain and the worms can start bringing this organic fertilizer that I've got down into the soil. And so you don't really want to do it real, real strong as a baby plant. Doesn't need a whole lot. But each spring, definitely give it some manure. They love manure. And then that compost helps shade the soil and keep the soil moisture more even. And so give them lots of manure and organic matter every spring. And if you want to use some Miracle-Gro or any generic garden fertilizer, that's certainly fine too. But try and add a little bit of organic matter each spring to the base of the hill.
Excellent. Well, David, thank you again for being on the show. I really appreciate you being here. It's been great having you.
Thank you, Brad. I'll have a toast to this local. I'm having an Alphadelic IPA from Hot Valley Brewing Company.
Dave's at the bottom of his glass almost, so I guess it's probably time to wrap it up. But Dave, thank you again for being on the show.
Let's wrap it up.
And again, that was Dave Wills from FreshHops.com. And Dave has a nice fresh batch of rhizomes in if you're interested in growing some hops yourself this season. And he also works at the Oregon Trail Brewery at OregonTrailBrewery.com. Well, we seem to be running a couple minutes late again. No surprise. I'm going to cut it off here fairly quickly. If you want to leave us any feedback, please leave a message at the discussion forum at beersmith.com/forum. Or you can also reach us by leaving a note at the blog at beersmith.com/blog under this episode. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.